This is a production of Cornell University.
Okay, I'm going to call this meeting to order. So thank you all for joining us today. Today's March 15th, 2021. As people are still entering the meeting, and I'm not positive that we have quorum yet, I will, if there are no objections from the assembly, I will move to the announcements first, and then we'll do the roll call after that. So for today, I have several things that I want to remind everyone of that are on our agenda for the next couple of weeks and the relatively few number of meetings we have left in the semester. So first, I'd like to remind everyone that on our next regular meeting, Martha Pollack is scheduled to speak with us. So just a reminder that these meetings are open not just to the GPSA members, but for all the graduate and professional student community. So I encourage you all to come to the next meeting prepared for any questions that you may have for her. I'm not sure exactly what she's going to be, what kind of remarks she's prepared to speak, but I'm sure there are plenty of things that you all are have on your mind that you would like to share with her. So I encourage you all to be present for that meeting. My second announcement is that we would like to begin the process of byline funding applications because next academic year is we have to make our next recommendation for the student activity fee. So for those organizations which are currently byline funded or which you would like to be considered for byline funding, the application process should go through the Appropriations Committee under Akarsha Pandit. And so Akarsha should, when it's appropriate, make an announcement on the specific deadlines for that. But I think the ultimate final deadline should be in the early fall of next semester, after which the Appropriations Committee will have a series of hearings reviewing the applications, and then the GPSA Assembly will vote on a student activity fee recommendation no later than the end of the fall semester next academic year. Okay. So I'd like to put that on everyone's radar. Next, I would like to make sure that everyone is aware that if you are a graduate or professional student who is working in some capacity on campus, you should be eligible for the vaccine. So if perhaps Nick or one of the others who has the link to the university page could share that with the group, then there is a tool that you can use if you have an on-campus position, even if it's not considered you're not considered an essential worker. If you are in any way considered a staff, so not 100% working virtually, then you should be able to receive a kind of letter from the university attesting to your eligibility to be vaccinated. So, it was just shared in the group. Thank you so much for that. And please share this with your constituents to make sure that, because I'm not sure that everyone is fully aware that they can be vaccinated at this point. Okay. Next, I would like to remind everyone that President Pollack approved our charter amendment from two meetings ago, which means that all standing committee chairpersons are now voting members. So you know who you are if that's the case. If you were already a voting member before, you still only have one vote. So please decide whether you would like to relinquish your regular voting membership so that someone else can take it, or whether you just want to hold on to both so that, in which case you would just have one vote. So by my calculation, there should be 31 voting members total, not counting the people who have like dual positions. And then, so please let me know if you would like to make that decision. Okay. And lastly, I want to remind everyone again on the elections coming up, voting members in the graduate school division. So everyone except the law school, the business school, and the vet school, will have elections on the second to last meeting of the semester, which would be around the middle of April. So if you would like to be a voting member for over the course of the next academic year, then you should try to hold an election during the division breakout of that meeting section. And then elections for officers and chairpersons of committees, except for appropriations and finance, will be held on the last meeting of the semester, which is on, I believe, May 3rd. So if you're interested in running for president, vice president, VP of operations, VP of communications, or any of the other standing committees, except for appropriations and finance, then please announce your candidacy on the second to last meeting, and then we'll hold a lecture for all of that on the last meeting of the semester. So if you have any questions about any of these positions, please reach out to me and I'd be happy to answer them. With that, I think that is all of the announcements for today, and I think we're ready to begin the roll call, if you please.
Mila Kantar. Jack Levin. Matthew Bolch.
I'm here.
Hannah Cole.
Present.
Stephanie Lopez.
Present.
Paul Vinage.
Here.
Martik Chatterjee. Maddie Keefe.
Here.
Tim Ludermoser.
Here.
Jordan Dotzel.
Here.
Cody Duell. Casey Laurent.
Here.
Chris O'Connor.
Here.
Hannah Bidgar Curtis.
Here.
Ruth Berenkovich.
Here.
Bridget Hayes.
Here.
Meredith Welch.
Here.
Charlie Day. Chris Anklin. Natalie Gonzalez. Chen Liu.
Here.
Christine Oenewa. Ryan Maloney. Amanda Cirillo. Alexandra Pressure.
Here.
Matthew Drescher.
Here.
Nick Danev.
Here.
Akarsha Pandey.
Here.
Kavya Krishnan.
Here.
Caroline Steingard.
Here.
And David Kent.
Here.
Okay. We have 21 out of 31 voting members present.
Okay, thank you very much. We have quorum for today. So I'd like to move on to our first order of business, which is a presentation from Anthony from PhDs at Cornell Tech on this request regarding the student activity fee. So for a little bit of context, Anthony and I, we had a meeting last Friday to discuss some ongoing issues with the way that the student activity fee has been allocated and distributed for students, student PhD student groups at Cornell Tech. And so I invited him to speak for briefly on this and answer any questions you may have. So Anthony, you're recognized. Thank you for coming.
Thank you so much. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. Yeah, thank you so much for coming. My name is Anthony. I'm a fifth-year PhD student in the Information Science Department. I currently am based out of Cornell Tech. Cornell Tech, as you might know, is a campus that Cornell University opened up a few years back. It's based in New York City. Students there study, there are faculty based there, and students, PhD students who study based there also work with those faculty out of that campus. Some do not travel back to Ithaca. Many do not, in fact, and so they're there full time. And we have some PhD students who have graduated who have never set foot in Ithaca, at least outside of visiting. And so one of the problems that we have right now is that these students contribute to the student activity fee. And while we would like to continue to be part of the GPSA and a part of the greater graduate student and professional student community, We don't have access to those kind of funds and the activities that those funds pay for when we're in New York City. That includes things like departmental activities, which are, you know, planned by departments which do not have a presence at Tech, things like Cornell Cinema, things like Big Red Barn, which are paid by Byline Funding from the student activity fee, but, you know, are based in Ithaca, so don't have a presence in Cornell Tech that cannot serve students based here. So one of the things that we've been trying to do, and, you know, some of you might have, this is a problem that we've been tackling for a while. And so if some of you might recognize me, if you've been with GPSA for a while, is to try to find a way to fund student activities at Cornell Tech in a more equitable way. We have student groups at Cornell Tech that represent student interests that can distribute money from Cornell Tech, but currently don't have the funds to do so. We just don't have access to this money without, you know, asking for approval for every event that we want to run. My goal today is to present our concerns to this body, you know, and ask for your support and help us figure out a way to provide a solution that more fairly provides funding, provides students at Cornell Tech with access to their student activity fees and for events paid from those fees. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks so much, Anthony. Does anyone have any questions for him? Caroline.
Yeah, I have a couple of questions. So we have language right now in terms of holding events that students have to say this event is open to the entire Cornell community. When they're applying for funds to GPSAFC, should we, if it were to get funding just for the specific events at Cornell Tech, would we exclude them from certain activities? I'm not sure if the question makes sense.
Should Cornell Tech students be excluded explicitly from Ithaca-based activities and vice versa? Is that what you're asking?
Yes, I think that the idea that we had discussed on Friday was that we would come up with like a list of groups that impact you on your campus, and then we would sort of subsidize your student activity fee to
the extent that those are not
discounted,
basically. Yes.
Right. So for those groups that we exclude, do you think you'll be, did you want me to say like for those groups, I don't know, there's like language to include and disclude sort of.
I don't feel like that's absolutely necessary in the sense that, you know, occasionally students visit Ithaca and I don't want to make them feel unwelcome. And then similarly, students can visit Tech and I don't want to say like, you know, if an event were to be planned at Tech, like, you know, I think a Bay student would be excluded. So from the practicality of the standpoint, you know, students cannot visit things in Ithaca, you know, and vice versa. But whether or not we want to, you know, de jure exclude someone is not the intent, I think.
Right.
Okay, Kavya.
Hey, Anthony, thanks for the discussion. This will be getting a little too into logistics, but I'm curious, are there students, A, that commute, or spend like part of semester as in Ithaca, part of it in New York City? And I guess, how were you thinking of, like, was that something where students would have to indicate right at the start of the semester to the bursar that they're going to be spending their entire semester in the Tech campus or vice versa, and then have their student fee allocated?
So the short answer to that question is no. Students have to declare a campus that they are based out of at the beginning of every semester, and that comes from the fact that students—that's a university requirement in the sense that, you know, their stipend is different depending on where they're based. So it's not possible for a student to sort of be like one foot in one campus. Like, but within the course of a semester, one foot in one campus, one foot in the other. The students might. And I have personally done this, is visit one campus, you know, from the other one, maybe to like attend an important meeting or something like that. And that might be like for a few days. But, you know, practically speaking and realistically speaking, I am based in one campus for the duration of the time, of the entire semester.
Okay, Tim.
Two questions. It sounds like there was definitely a previous conversation that I was not privy to, so sorry if this is repeating ground, but I guess my first broader question is a preferred solution something where Cornell Tech students may be paid, you know, some 60, 70, I don't know, some reduced student fee, or is a preferred solution something where more of that pot, everyone's paying the same amount, but Cornell Tech is receiving more money? Because those seem to me to be, I mean, it seems like you would want to do one or the other, probably not both. And they both, I can see arguments. And then my second question I was wondering is, I haven't visited the Cornell Tech campus. Is there anything like the Big Red Barn, or could there be any sort of graduate student community space? Like, would creating that be a useful avenue for something like this?
Sure. Let me answer the two questions in order. So for the first question on whether or not, you know, it would be preferable to distribute more of the existing student activity fee or reduce a student activity fee. For some context, master's students at Cornell Tech currently actually receive the full student activity fee in basically refunds. So they have an organization at Cornell Tech specifically for master's students, and there is a portion of the funding, the AC, I forget what the document is, but basically it stipulates that students, master students based at Cornell Tech pay the $83 or whatever the activity fee is, and then they receive 100% of it back directly to them. So like from a perspective of logistics, it would be simplest to kind of follow that model. Though my goal is not to fully follow that model, because I recognize that students, PhD students, do benefit some from some of the things that are covered by a student activity fee. So it would also not be fair to retrieve the entire 100% of the activity fee back to Cornell Tech in some manner. So to answer your question, both models are possible, but the reimbursement portion is more plausible and logistically simpler because it follows a model that currently exists for master's students. In terms of your question about creating a PhD student space, there is no Big Red Barn at or equivalent at Cornell Tech. As David mentioned at the beginning, I kind of represent an organization called PACT, which is just an informal student group called PhD Students at Cornell Tech. As that organization, we are trying to create such a space, which is really just a room, a lounge. But there is no separate organization that, you know, is running that on our behalf and is, you know, serving drinks or whatever.
Okay, Caroline.
I sort of have a follow-up question to the question that I asked before, but in terms of virtual events, because everything is virtual right now, and GPSAFC is paying for postage as well to send anything that you need to participate in those events to wherever anybody may be, whether it's in America or otherwise. So do Cornell Tech students take advantage of those sorts of things, or would they in the future consider that option?
Yeah, actually, that is a very good question. There have been more cross-campus kind of events based on the fact that because everyone is virtual, you know, their physicality matters less in this particular context. Whether or not that continues past COVID, that is an open question. Whether or not people want it to continue past COVID is another question. I think, in general, I would separate those two issues in the sense that you know, at Cornell Tech, we do currently and continue to host events that are open to students from Ithaca who might visit us or who might have interest in attending. And from that perspective, you know, you're all just guests of ours, and then vice versa, you know, there are some events in Ithaca that if they are available virtually, some students do attend. But at the current moment, it is rare. I would certainly like to work towards a future where we do that, but I feel like that is perhaps an unrealistic expectation to assume that they will be completely fluid as well.
Okay, is there any further discussion? I think I want to take a moment to give a little bit more context of what we discussed in our Friday meeting. So this is oversimplifying a little bit, but basically right now, although master's students are getting the funds from their student activity fee kind of totally reimbursed via this organization, that's not the case at all for PhD students at Cornell Tech. And we've been, for several years now, been trying to figure out a solution such that it can be, equity will be distributed to PhD students. And one of the ways that we kind of, ideas that we entertained at the time was to, or in on Friday's meeting, was to try to revise in the form of a charter amendment our byline funding application process such that we can distinguish between organizations and groups that Cornell Tech students absolutely do not benefit from those in which they do benefit from, and find a way to reimburse Cornell Tech students for a portion of the student activity fee, which would go toward the PACT, which could be nominated as the group that manages those funds for Cornell Tech students or something along those lines, right? So what I think we need right now is someone in the GPSA, preferably someone working in the Appropriations Committee or the Finance Commission, to be kind of like a point person between Cornell Tech PhD students and the GPSA, such that we can work out the details of some kind of amendment that can address their concerns, right? So such that we have something more actionable. Nick?
Thanks, David. Anthony, sorry, I know we're not supposed to ask direct questions, but just I'll direct it to you, David, and then you can ask Anthony. Would anyone from Cornell Tech be willing to sit on these committees so that they could kind of liaise between Cornell Tech's campus and the committees based here in Ithaca?
Yeah, go ahead, Anthony.
Sure. I will say, at the very minimum, I would be willing to do that, particularly from some context. I was the prior president of PACT last year. We actually, this will seem weird, but we follow a calendar, what, I can't even remember the name. We do not follow the academic calendar for our appointments. So my appointment ended in December of 2020. So this was one of my goals. We don't have that many students who are familiar with GPSA, which is sort of why I'd be willing to do this. But like, also, I'm pretty sure even if I was not able to do it, we would be able to find someone who would also be willing to sit in. In general, I would certainly love for us to overall become more familiar and engaged in the processes here.
Yeah, and I think we would be happy to reach out to whoever you'd like us to try it. But I think it's really important that whatever solution we think up of in the GPSA, that it has your approval, because this is obviously a kind of a long-term solution we're trying to work out. So, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, is there any further questions for Anthony? Okay, with that, I think we'll conclude this section of our meeting, and Anthony, will thank you so much for coming, and we'll be in touch with you soon about next steps for this topic, okay? So now, just a reminder for everyone to please, in the chat, Nick put a message for you to add your division abbreviation before your name, and so that when we get to division breakout, which is a little bit later in this meeting, we'll be ready to do that. Okay, so please don't forget about that. And now I actually realize I skipped over the approval of the minutes for March 1st meeting. Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
Motion to approve the minutes.
Okay. Is there a second?
Seconded.
Are there any amendments that would like to be made or discussion of approving the minutes? Uh, Okay, seeing none, is there any objection to approving the minutes now as they stand? Okay, seeing none, then the minutes for March 1st are approved. We're now going to move on to the vacancies and election section of our meeting. All of these are positions of terms that will conclude at the end of this academic year. I'm not sure if that's the case for the UA representative. We'll have to check if that's the case for Cody's position. But I know that for the VIST chairperson and masters at large, these are terms that only go until the end of this academic year. And these are all elected, not appointed positions. So first vacancy is a spot on the university assembly as a representative of the GPSA. This is a position taking over from Cody, who just resigned a couple weeks ago. Is there any nomination for this position? If so, please raise your hand. Nick.
If no one else wants to run for it, I will self-nominate, but that's only if no one else wants to run for it.
Okay, so Nick has nominated himself. Is there any other nomination? Okay, seeing none, then I will declare that this is an uncontested election, and I will just say, is there any objection now to Nick being nominated to the University Assembly? Okay, seeing none, then you are hereby elected. Congratulations, Nick. I look forward to seeing you on Tuesday. Next is the DIST chairperson for the Diversity and International Student Committee. Is there anyone who would like to nominate someone or be nominated for this committee? Okay, seeing none, then this position will remain vacant. Next, we will consider a Masters at Large voting representative for as a voting member. This is open to any master's student in any division at Cornell. Would someone like to be nominated for this position or to nominate someone else? Okay, seeing none, then this position will also remain vacant. Okay, if there is no other motions at this time, then this concludes the vacancies and election portion of today's meeting, and we will now move on to new business. The first resolution on the agenda for today is Resolution 14, instituting the GPSAFC vice chair position, submitted by Caroline Steingar, the GPSAFC chairperson. Caroline, would you like to introduce the resolution?
Yeah, thanks, David. This resolution is just to legitimize the vice chair position and put it into the bylaws. And it just outlines that the vice chair responsibilities will include organizing and scheduling the FC meetings, including assigning the budgets to the commissioners and taking attendance for the Tier 4 members, and assisting the chair in writing new policies for the GPSA bylaws and funding guidelines, and also standing in for the chair when the position is temporarily vacant. I wrote this in specifically because there was such a hard time finding a chair position previously, and I think that having a second person, a vice chair, would improve the chances of somebody volunteering for the chair position in the future.
Okay, thank you, Caroline. Is there a second to considering the resolution?
Second.
All right, it's been properly seconded, and the question is now stated before the assembly. Is there any discussion or questions for Caroline? So I actually would like to make a kind of a point of information, just a clarification, is that this vice chair is designed to help share some of the responsibilities of the position, but if it comes to the point where the chairperson becomes vacant, then the vice chairperson would, I believe, automatically take over the chairship. So if there was a resignation, they would serve as chair until the point in which the GPSA could elect a new chair. So that is my understanding of the procedure of how it would work for this vice chairperson. I would also like to make clear that after some discussion, we decided for this vice chair to be someone appointed directly by the chair and does not need to be approved by the GPSA. We thought that this was necessary in discussion because if it comes to the point where the interim chair, there was a vacancy for a long time and then someone took over as chair, we would want them to take to choose a vice chair as quickly as possible and not have to wait for it to be approved. So, but if you guys disagree with this, then this would be the time to present an amendment to change that. With that said, is there any further discussion? Nick.
David, I move to call the question.
Okay, and seeing that there is no other there's no other motion and no other discussion, I'll put the question to the assembly and let's now vote. And just a reminder that we are now using the yes-no voting instead of the raising hands. You should all have updated Zoom to the most recent version by now, but if any voting member is still unable to get their check mark to stay up for more than a few seconds, please say so now so that we can go back to raising hands. Otherwise, we're using yes-no. So all those in favor of the resolution, please click yes now, all voting members. Okay, and all those opposed, please click no. Okay, in the opinion of the chair, 20 are in favor, none are against, and I believe one abstention. So, Nick, is there a point of order?
Yeah, point of order. There were 21 in favor.
Okay, sorry. I saw 20, but I will take that as accepted. 21 in favor, none against, and no abstentions. So the resolution is adopted. Thank you very much, Caroline. We'll now move on to the next order of business, which is resolution. Well, actually, this was not on the agenda, but it was announced beforehand. Resolution 15, which is titled Requesting a Full, Transparent, and Ongoing Accounting of the Effect of the COVID-19 Pandemic on the Funding of Continuing Graduate Students, submitted by David Kent, Tim Lodermoser, and Morgan Eisenlord. So would one of you like to introduce the resolution?
Sure.
Go ahead.
Thank you, David. Sure. So this follows from the conversation we had at the last GPSA general meeting. And I can't share my screen on this computer, but
I could probably do that for you. Okay. For at least my screen. Let me see if I can get it. Okay. Can you see the resolution 15?
Yes.
Okay. Just let me know if you want me to scroll, okay?
Okay, great. I'm going to read the abstract, which I think sums up the why and the what pretty well. But just to put it out there. So the COVID-19 pandemic, through delays of in-person research, reduced availability of grants, and possible delays in students' graduation, will put additional pressure on all existing sources of funding. Continuing graduate students facing funding challenges and uncertainty need the support and leadership of the graduate school to help mitigate the effects of the pandemic on their academic futures. This resolution asks for a periodic report on the state of graduate student funding, a plan for relief if that funding is insufficient in aggregate, and a yearly report on the state of the cohort affected by this pandemic. So basically what we're looking for is I think it's quite clear that there's a lot of anxiety among the student body and feelings of uncertainty and real problems with funding and anxiety about funding. And so what we're looking for is facts. So a sort of transparent report about the real availability of funding across the graduate school.
Okay, thanks, David. Before we move on, just to clarify, do you intend to take out the reviewed by line at the final version of this resolution where it says name of committee?
Yeah.
Okay, so just to clarify that you're presenting this to the GPSA as members and not necessarily as the committee, right?
That's right.
Okay, great. Is there a second to considering the resolution?
Second.
Okay, it's been seconded, and I now state the question to the assembly. Is there any discussion? If it's right, I'm going to stop sharing my screen because I can't see your hands otherwise. Any discussion? Tim?
I guess just to get it out of the way, I'd like to propose an amendment to strike that line 13 that is sort of superfluous, as you said.
Yeah, so I think that it's you don't have to present an amendment because I asked David if he wanted to remove that before I officially presented it to the assembly. So it's still in your possession at that point. So you can just say, I'm deleting this now at this point. So we'll consider this deleted now. I don't think we need to do an amendment, but thanks for noting that. Yeah.
Great.
Is there any further discussion? Hannah, sorry, you're saying, do you have your hand up or you're clicking yes?
Sorry, that was left over.
Okay, sorry. Is there any further discussion? Anthony.
David, can you give me a little bit more idea or explanation of sort of what kind of things you want them to report on or what you would expect them to report on?
There was a lot of discussion at the last meeting about TA ships, for example. People were concerned about less availability of funding from TA ships. And so one good thing to know would be, is that true? So how much TA funding is available? How much projected funding is available to individual PIs? And so basically what we're looking for is, does it look like everyone that's currently a student in the graduate school is likely to be able to find funding in the upcoming semester? And if not, what will we do about it? So that's the information, essentially. And that's listed actually in the request. It says, the report should include at a minimum estimates of funding available to graduate students in aggregate and projected funding needs for continuing students, taking into account an estimate of graduation delays with figures broken down by college and demographic information. So that's the specific ask.
Okay, Tim?
As a co-sponsor, can I also add to the answer to that question?
You may, yeah.
That'd be great. David just read the exact line, but just to expand a little bit, I think the kind of thing we're interested in is it specifically most of the colleges are actually fine, but arts and sciences is facing a lot of problems, or is every college 5% worse off than they would be in a normal year? We wanted to be very explicit about including demographic information because we know a lot of the impacts of the pandemic, right, have been focused on Black folks across the U.S., students from first-generation families, sort of in aggregate across the country, we know those impacts, right? There's been a lot of work about the effect of the pandemic specifically on women faculty. I don't think there necessarily is great data for those same things at the graduate student level, and I know that we certainly don't know at Cornell. So we want to see if we're having disparate demographic impacts in who, you know, are we having disproportionate impacts on who needs time to extension? Are we having disproportionate impacts on who is facing funding uncertainty? Those are the kinds of things that would be really, really important to know, especially as, you know, every year, sort of Cornell is trying to be more and more committed to diversity, but we need to look for these negative impacts as well to be taking into account what needs to be done next.
Kavya.
Hey, Finn and David, thanks a lot for this resolution. I was a little curious on if this was considering professional students, I guess. I mean, the funding is a little different, so I would assume that it's not an easy fix, but specifically in the part where we're looking for data, is that something you want data collected on professional schools? And in that case, should that be an amendment added that says graduate school and professional schools collect this information? Or is that something you think will complicate the issue and that should be a completely separate resolution or discussion?
Would anyone like to answer that? Yeah. David?
Thank you. That's a great question. While we were writing this, I was thinking about how professional students fit in here, and I think it certainly would be appropriate for, just as you mentioned, to collect data on them also and see what's happening there. But yeah, it is maybe it's worth a whole another consideration.
Nick?
Thanks, David. I just have a question for David or Tim about kind of how this data collection would work. Is it something that would be done by the graduate school completely, or would it be in coordination with the SAC from the GPSA together with the grad school? So essentially what I'm suggesting is, like, regardless of whether we pass this resolution today or table it or whatever, I think what I'm suggesting is that we should kind of maybe establish a line of communication regarding this data collection with someone from the graduate school yeah, I'm guessing with the graduate school and the professional schools, just so that we have a plan in place for how we would want to execute the things that are outlined in the resolution. But substantially, I fully agree with the things in the resolution. I'm just more concerned about how we would be able to pull it off.
So David or Tim, would you like to respond to that, or should we move on?
I can respond. I imagine that the graduate school it is already concerned about most of the things that are mentioned in here and thinking about it and dealing with it. And so part of this would be in here we request that they provide a report to the GPSA on a yearly basis. So that's listed in here. There's no provision for any sort of ongoing discussion about it, but if that seems like a reasonable thing to do, I think that might be a good idea.
Okay, Ruth Brankovich.
So this is piggybacking a little bit off of Nick's question, but in terms of how you're collecting information and what kind of information you're collecting, are you also including some sort of provisions or some sort of feedback from graduate students themselves regarding not just the amount of funding available, but their amount of work that they're expected to do? And this kind of comes from our conversation last week where students were reporting that they are working many more hours and they're not able to fulfill all of their teaching assistant duties because of the amount of classes they have to teach or the amount of work they're supposed to do. So is that kind of going to be included as part of this? Not just like, oh, we have this many dollars for students per this many students, but how many students, how many classes students are actually trying to teach?
Tim, would you like to answer?
Yeah, and Dave, feel free to disagree with my read on this if I'm misrepresenting this, but I feel like as we were having the conversation, so we met in SAC the Wednesday after that meeting 2 weeks ago, and then Morgan, Dave, and I met this past Saturday to kind of hammer out the language. So the three of us did the exact language here, but it came out of that SAC conversation as well. And basically, I think where we landed was there are a lot of things that are important. Overload and burnout is really important. The funding thing is very, very time sensitive in that those decisions get made basically now. And if we want to make sure that we're seeing what's really happening and if we want to keep track of people potentially slipping through the cracks, the line I kept saying on Saturday was, I'm worried about my peers being homeless in September. That's my fear, all right? There's a lot of problems. There's a lot of things that need addressed. But my fear is someone at the grad school who doesn't have family to lean back on, who doesn't have, a great support structure, is not going to be funded this fall and is going to be in unstable housing without food. And that's, you know, I'm getting a little emotional there, but that's my focus right now. And in that context, and in the context of, you know, we were already late getting this to the assembly, trying to get something moving quickly, getting this resolution really focused on this funding question and getting this report, you know, we say that we want the GPSA to get a report to us in June. So 2.5 months to collect the data, analyze the data, get a report, and get it to everybody. I think those other issues are also really important, but putting them all in one package felt like risking none of it getting done. You know what I mean? So I don't want to say that those things aren't important or discount them, but it was just a matter of the time sensitivity of the issue, I think. We tried to narrow it down a little bit from that broad conversation. I would definitely be in support of further resolutions regarding those issues. We actually did start putting together a survey to collect some information on TA overload and burnout, but we just didn't quite have time to get it out to people. So that was also part of the reason it didn't get included here, because we wanted to have some preliminary data and we didn't wind up getting that in time. Yeah, Dave, feel free to add to what I just said if you like. But
I agree that we thank you, David. We did feel that it was important and will be looking into it. It's on the docket. So
thank you.
Okay, Meredith.
Hi. So I was wondering if there's any scope in this resolution to ask for data on extensions and like across years of graduate school that were citing any like pandemic related delays. So I think the funding question is in part tied to the fact that a lot of people across years are experiencing delays. And in the spring, and even into the fall, I know, like, at least the communication I was receiving that was that, like, you know, extensions for different milestones were being generously given. But it's like, as far as I know, there hasn't been much discussion around how these extensions are cumulative and will affect not just people who, like, were expecting to graduate this year, but also in the coming years. And I think that that would be important to know so that we can compare like extensions on the research side to, and like the progress to degree side with the funding picture in the next few years.
Okay, would either of you like to respond to that in any way?
Sure, yeah, that's like exactly what we asked for. So we asked mm-hmm. for, basically the time to degree and dropout rate of students who were enrolled during the COVID-19 pandemic for the next 6 years. And we addressed like one of the reasons that we cite for possible pressure on existing sources of funding is if students take longer to graduate, then there are more students and the same amount of money, maybe.
Can I ask a follow-up question?
You may.
Okay, so I think I agree. I think maybe I'm wondering if there is explicit room to ask for like how many people by year of PhD in the last year have filed extensions for things like their A exam or forming their committees or whatever the other milestones are, because that's like, I think what we have listed here is maybe a little bit too late in terms of intervening at the point of funding. Like we would want to be able to secure funding so people don't drop out. And I think if we had an idea of like, what is the scope of the problem that graduate students are facing in terms of extensions to various degree milestones, that would be very informative.
Okay. Is there any discussion?
I would be completely in support of an amendment, just sort of adding to the language here to say that it should include information on milestone progress. I mean, I think that would probably be like five words somewhere near the bottom, and I think that would Would that more or less cover what you're saying?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea.
Would you like to present that amendment right now? Or if someone else wants to write it out, what you're thinking?
I can do that, I guess. How should I do this?
So we're going to need it in wording. So you'll have to, if you could type it in the chat to everyone, and then if you want to do that first, and then we can continue discussing in the meantime, if someone wants to just say their opinion about things, or so we can keep going and not have to call a vote while you're doing that.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay, with that, is there any further discussion? I think while we're waiting, if I can step out of the chair for a little bit to ask a question of my own, is what would you like, just to be clear, what would you like to be done with this resolution today? Is it important that this is voted on and sent to the president, or do you find it, would it be equally effective for it to be sent back to your committee so that you can then bring it to another level of the university, just to be clear, either David or Tim or...
Personally, I think it's better if we vote on it today, just because everything is so time sensitive. I will certainly understand if people are more comfortable giving it 2 more weeks, because I know it came in late. But, if I had my way with it, I suppose, so to speak.
Right. I guess I was not saying voting as opposed to delaying. I meant voting as opposed to sending it to your committee to then forward on to someone else. Right. Which is another option, which can do the same thing, but I think that it just depends on, whether you want this to be something for the entire university to see or not, right? And it seems like the answer is yes, you want it to be voted on. All right, is there any further discussion? Okay, Meredith, would you like to, it seems like you posted a proposed amendment to the resolution. Can you say it so we have it on the record?
Yes. So the proposed amendment is, I don't know the line, but in the part that says that this report includes at a minimum, I will propose to add to that paragraph, data on extensions filed to the graduate school for time to degree milestones, special committee formation, A exams, et cetera, citing COVID-19 related delays for the spring 2020. Spring 2020 and fall 2020 semesters. Sorry, not fall 2021.
Okay, so if I'm understanding you correctly, this will be inserted at line 43 just before the and that's in all caps. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Is there a second to this amendment?
Seconded.
Okay. It's been properly seconded. We're now considering the amendment. Is there any discussion of the amendment?
I'd like to propose 2 adjustments to the amendment, actually.
Okay. Go ahead.
First, I would like to propose, instead of moving it right before the and, actually putting it after, at a minimum, colon. Because right now that paragraph ends with broken down by college and demographic information, and I think we would want this information also broken down by college and demographic information. So if we put this information earlier in the paragraph, it's just, I think, a little more obvious in the flow that we're saying college and demographic for everything we just said.
Okay, so can you be clear exactly where would you like for us to put it?
I don't have the version with the line numbers in front of me, but the...
The paragraph starts at 41 and it goes to 43, those 3 lines. So you're saying you want to put it at the beginning of the paragraph, is that right?
So
I think, at 41, at a minimum, colon, the line, comma, estimates of funding available is continuing that way, if I'm right, Tim.
Right, yeah. So at a minimum, colon, data on extensions filed, degree milestones, and then, yeah.
Okay, in that case, let's just step back a minute and say, Meredith, would you like to accept that revision, or do you want to consider that separately?
I accept that revision.
Okay, so Now let's say, is there any second to this amendment? Caveat?
Yes.
Second, yes. Okay, is there any discussion? Okay, seeing no discussion, let's now vote on the amendment. If you could please, voting members, click yes if you're in favor of the amendment, no if you are not in favor. And we'll just, I think we can just do it at the same time, yeah. Okay, I saw 20 in favor and none against. So that and that leaves one abstention. So the amendment is adopted. And we're now going back to discussion of the resolution. Is there any further discussion of the resolution? Okay, seeing no... David?
Yeah, I wanted to ask, what were you imagining when you suggested sending it back to the committee and passing it on to someone? Is there some reason you think that might be more effective?
I mean, I didn't have reason to say that it might be more effective. I just thought that if there's some particular person at the university that you would like this information from, sometimes it can be more effective for resolutions not to be adopted and then sent to the president. But rather you go and then you schedule meetings with other administrators to say, hey, here's what we want. You know, let's talk about how we can get that. And then you can get what you want from the resolution sometimes without needing to get a response from Martha Pollack on it. Right. Nick.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was alluding to as well when I asked my question, because what we found at least was more effective with the ITAP was kind of, you know, not necessarily immediately passing the resolution, but actually scheduling meetings with stakeholders and kind of coming to a joint conclusion and then coming out with a proposed resolution that's kind of acknowledging the work that was done with those administrators. So seeing that, you know, Jan Allen is here and Dean Bohr is here as well, and I think I saw Jan LeMay as well, like maybe it would be more productive to send this back to committee review and have someone talk to someone from the graduate school, but also I'm not opposed to voting in favor of this resolution if that's what you guys as sponsors would want. I'm just kind of throwing out ideas.
Okay, Kavya.
I will say just the time sensitivity of this might weigh your decision one way or the other. I think both are very valuable ways to get work done. Just given that we have an urgency with this, getting it passed might be more helpful. But that's okay. Personal opinion. I don't know the actual effectiveness.
Okay, Tim.
I think part of our hope with actually approaching it as a vote was sort of, you know, I think part of what came out 2 weeks ago was when we started talking about individual anecdotes we heard here and there, it became quickly apparent that lots of people are stressed about lots of different things. And I think part of the reason we wanted to treat this as a vote was to say, yes, GPSA thinks this is important. GPSA, you know, there is a vote here recording that this needs to be pushed forward. And then I absolutely think it would turn into meetings with the graduate school is what, you know, would happen next. I mean, we explicitly talk about that to a certain extent. But I don't know. I think there is a level of feeling like having the force of a vote behind it makes it clear that this is an issue of broad concern and not the three people that always yell are yelling again, which is something I worry about sometimes as one of those three people.
Okay, gotcha. Is there any further discussion? Okay, seeing none, and if there's no further discussion and there are no further motions, then I will call the question on this resolution and we'll now vote on it. So all those in favor of the resolution, please press yes, and all those opposed, please press no. Okay. So in the opinion of the chair, there are 20 in favor of the resolution and there are none opposed, and that leaves one abstention. The resolution is hereby adopted. So thank you very much for those who spent the time working on this resolution and getting it into us today. Okay, if there are no further, is there any further new business that would like to be brought to the GPSA now? Okay, seeing none, then we'll move on to the next order of business for today, which is the committee reports. First, within the executive committee, Nick.
Hi, yeah, so the executive committee actually does have some announcements or reports, I guess, for today. First, we had a meeting, as we were asked to at the last GPSA meeting, with the provost and Dean Bohr. It was a very productive meeting because we came to a common ground on what we think is important for changes to the ITAP. Currently what's going on is the provost's office is kind of discussing our proposals with the relevant stakeholders in the ITAP office and the relevant offices, and we're going to be hearing back relatively soon. And what I hope to do is either amend or completely retract the previous resolution and come up with a new one where we, instead of making this list of demands, we'll just acknowledge all the things that we've agreed on with the provost's office and with the graduate school, and kind of officialize that in a potential memorandum of understanding or something like that between the GPSA, the graduate school, and the provost's office. So as of now, while I can't share the exact specifics, I will say that everything that was raised in that resolution was raised to the attention of the provost, and we are generally in agreement about how to proceed with the ITAP. And once I have more specific details, I'll make sure to share them with the GPSA. Also, the executive committee met with the Vice Provost for International Affairs, the Executive Director of the Office of Global Learning and the Associate Vice Provost, along with also Dean Bohr. And we discussed the GPCI section, the Graduate and Professional Community Initiative section on international students. We saw that the Office of the Vice Provost for International Affairs, together with the Office of Global Learning, have actually implemented some of the things that we had raised in the GPCI previously. They're working on implementing some other things. Generally, the idea is to increase communication with international graduate students, increase knowledge about the available resources, and certainly increase the amount of available resources for international students. It was a pretty long meeting that we had today. It was an hour, so you know, there were a lot of things that were discussed, but that's kind of the overall summary. If anyone wants to know more specifics, I'm more than happy to kind of draft up a report of that meeting and share it with the assembly. But overall, it was just kind of a review of what the GPCI outlines and what the relevant offices have done, what they intend to do, and how they want to know how we want to see those things done. Other than that, I can't really think of anything else that the executive committee discussed these past 2 weeks. With that, I think that's the end of the executive committee report.
Okay, so thanks so much, Nick. Because I forgot to do this last time, I want to give just a little bit of time for Q&A after each report, just in case people have immediate questions that come up from what people say. So does anyone have any questions for Nick right now that they want to raise? Okay, seeing none, then we'll move on to the communications committee with Kavya. Do you have any updates?
Just spread the word on the open positions that we still have, specifically this chair. But we're also going to have elections at the end of the term, and we'll talk more on how to get that messaging out to other people. I also have a DISC update, if that's okay. The Building Allyship series is having the last event of the semester, March 17th. And it's with a link for the entire series. And right at the end, the actual event registration link is also there. So definitely take a look at that. It's a really great series.
Okay, any questions for Kavya? Okay, so seeing none, we'll move on to operations. Mardik. Okay, it seems Mardik is not here. I'll double back at the end. So finance, Caroline.
Hi, I don't have any updates besides still working on the resolution for the alcohol policy. There were quite a few concerns brought up from a couple of clubs, so we're meeting with risk management to talk about how to best meet the needs of those clubs and others. And then besides that, our next meeting, I believe, is April 6th.
Okay, thanks. Any questions for Caroline? Okay, seeing none, we'll move on to appropriations. Akarsha?
Hi. So, yeah, I do have just want to share plans. So one thing is I definitely want to let the people know the deadline of when they have to submit for the byline funding. So I will put that information. I'll post it and I'll share it with all the committee members and chairs by the end of this week. The other thing that I also wanted to discuss was that I've heard back from the finance committee, and I believe I've heard back from two committees about how much reserve fund they have or they might be interested in donating. I think some people are still figuring out how much funds they will use for events. Based on our communications with Laureen from SOBO, I guess what I can do is probably at the end of the term, if there are any excess funds that people from different chairs or committees want to donate, I can write up all the total donations and share that with Laureen, and then that can be an additional or second donation made to the Access Fund. Yeah, so that's it for plans.
Okay, thank you, Akarsha. Is there any questions? Okay, seeing none, let's move on to faculty teaching. Cody, are you here? I think Cody said he wasn't going to be here. Sorry about that. Programming, Casey?
Hi. So we have our Build Your Own Wind Chimes event happening this Thursday. So we have 9 kits left over if anybody else wants to hop on last minute. So I just want to make a shout out to the whole committee. I think they did a really great job putting this all together, and we were able to figure out what length to make the chimes to get the first 6 notes of Cornell's alma mater. So it's a real nice handmade wind chime. And then we're also working on a couple of activities with the Big Red Barn. So the committee's slowly been growing as more people have been reaching out to me to help join. So hopefully end of the semester and in the summer, we'll have a couple more things planned for you guys. And that's it.
Okay. Any questions for Casey? Okay. And last but not least, let's hear from David Kenton, Student Advocacy.
Thank you. So we spent a lot of time discussing that resolution we just heard about. We have a few other specific issues, which we will be talking about at the next meeting, including issues with faculty student mentoring, some general communication issues with the graduate school, and we discussed sort of framing SAC as a place that students can go directly if they have questions or need assistance somehow, so they could reach out to us. So hopefully we'll develop those a little more fully at our next meeting, which is this Wednesday, the 17th, at 5:30, I think. It's not on the website yet, but it will be soon.
All right. Thanks, David. Are there any questions for David? Okay. Let's come back to Mardik. Does operations have any updates?
Not really. Sorry about the last time.
It's okay. All right. Thanks very much. So that concludes committee reports. Now let's do for about, I think we have about 10 minutes for a breakout session by division. My guiding question for you, if you want a discussion question, is have your departments been adhering to wellness day policies to the degree that you expect or that they should be adhering to them? Nick.
Yes, so sorry, before we break out, the attendance sheet, I just posted it in the chat.
Yes, thank you. Okay. With that, let's go into the division breakout. Okay, it seems like we have most of everyone. It seems like we have most of everyone back. So let's now move on to the open forum section of the meeting. For those of you who may be new, this is a part of the meeting where anyone can speak to the GPSA on any topic. So is there any discussion? Anyone like to speak? Tim.
I'll go ahead and just give a short report regarding your question about the wellnesses.
Yeah.
It sounds like in life sciences, there's a lot of variation. We had a couple departments that people said their departments communicated really clearly that people should take the time to rest. And, I mean, obviously, if you have experiments running, you have experiments running. But some departments, it sounded like, had very positive messaging. Other departments, it sounded like, sent kind of passive-aggressive, well, there's no classes, but we're all going to be here, so you should probably be here kind of stuff. So it just seems like variability was really high in regards to how they're treating the wellness days. It also came out as part of that conversation that despite the policy change, I think that was just last year, maybe it was 2 years ago, that more clearly stated that graduate students should not be expected to work on official university holidays, you know, Christmas Day, New Year's Day, that sounds like it's still not being honored in parts of life sciences. So that might be something that would be good for the graduate school the next time a university holiday approaches. I'm not sure what the next one is, to send a very explicit, no, really, this is a holiday for graduate students too, or if they have to work for some reason, they have to get an extra day somewhere else, because it's clear that that policy is not being consistently honored at this point. Thanks for the question. It was a good start to our conversation.
Yeah, thanks so much for sharing your thoughts on the meeting. Yeah. Any further discussion? So, I mean, just briefly, I can clarify. So this for wellness days, it did occasionally come up that some grad students had classes that were scheduled for some reason on a wellness day because the faculty member might not have known that it was a wellness day. And I'm part of the reason I wanted to ask this question, because I'm sure that there might be students out there who did have classes scheduled despite being a wellness day, but we just didn't hear from them. And I thought that maybe this could be a chance for us to see to what extent you feel like wellness days are being honored by your department and which ways you feel like they've been eroded or could be managed better. So that's part of the reason I wanted to put that question out there. Okay, is there anyone else? Nick.
I'd like to motion to adjourn.
Okay. Is there a second from the motion to adjourn, since we're still a little bit early?
Second.
Okay. Are there any objections to adjourning at this time? Okay. Seeing none, this meeting is now adjourned. Thank you very much.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.